appropriate is that? Boom. Okay, we are back, and it's time for Jeff and Erica to weigh in on various issues, and we're doing our best to keep the panorama certainly available to all of you, and not to understand that the posting of the week by whatever expert they're pushing this week is always going to be making noise. This is how they keep people upset, confused, and disoriented. They'll launch a new story, but when you start seeing hydrogels, nanotechnology, self-replicating, whatever, these are all buzzwords. And they're putting them in these stories with microscopes that are maybe 100 power. You cannot see nanotechnology or any resonance thereof with a 100 power scope, a light microscope. It's a joke. So there's a lot going on. We're going to touch on a number of different things tonight. But most of all, I think the issue that is completely off limits to the mainstream media, the controlled Zionist media, which will never talk about anything they're not allowed to, and you know that, is the human aspect of this catastrophe, this war on humankind, the human suffering. Our view is that virtually everyone who has gotten a competent, viable injection, or two, or three, or four, or six, they are in fact percolating any number of things which are anti-life. All right, I'll leave it at that. You there, partner? How are you?
I'm here, Jeff. I'm doing okay.
You deserve a hot fudge sundae. It's summer. The year is half gone already. Gone.
I know.
Hell, I deserve a hot fudge sundae.
Well, get one while you still can.
That's true. Or a humorous sandwich.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make her laugh. That's a nice laugh she has. I can't resist. Okay. Now, we have our issues here of vaccidents. We have vades. But vaccidents now are kind of out of the loop. You don't hear about them very much anymore. But they're still happening all over the place. And one of the more credible media docs posted something about a couple of the recent deadly bus crashes. There have been a couple of them. Manitoba, Canada was one. Killed 16 seniors. That's June this month, or last month now, as of tonight. Australian bus crash killed 10 wedding guests. Oh, happy times, happy times. And you wonder about the drivers, just like pilots. They're pilots of sorts. What do you know about these things? Anything? This is Paul Alexander posted.
Yeah, well, there's a compilation of news stories regarding these recent bus crashes. And, of course, the question is, were the drivers shot up? You have to ask, right?
The answer is unknown. And the answer probably is, you betcha. This is back in the days of the mandate, and they really rolled it out heavily in Canada, just like they did in Australia.
Yeah, most public servants were
absolutely
mandated to take it.
You want to have a ticket to drive a bus on the public highways and carry the populace around as a commercial enterprise? You roll up that sleeve. And unfortunately, most of them did. So when you're out and about, keep in mind that the hands on the wheel of the car approaching you may not be fully in control of that car. The mind may be malfunctioning. We know the brain stem is a wonderful new home for the spike protein. It gets in there, it begins to microclot, and when you microclot, you have cell death. Whether these are neurocells, neurology cells, it kills the body. And so how can the brain work? And then in the brain proper, we know the spike goes right on in and begins immediately to do its dirty best to cause trouble. So we do think these people, all the vaxxed, and unfortunately we're leaning now more toward the unvaxxed, the shedding victims, as percolating something as well. Maybe it's further down the road, but if they have been duly shed upon and transfected with either spike, the plasmids, which create the construction of the mRNA instructions, these people are in trouble. They're in trouble.
Yeah, I'd seen, it's funny you should say that, with the accidents in the last week or so on the EMT calls, there's been a noticeable uptick in vaccidents. Well, what I'm assuming are vaccidents.
Right.
You know, one car, just in a very low speed area. What's the word for it? Residential area, probably 20 mile an hour zone. The
right.
car flipped upside down. You know, so how fast
That's
were they going?
Trick.
What were they doing to flip a car in a 20 mile per hour speed zone?
Mm-hmm.
And then today, there was one that, according to the call, there was a witness prior to it happening, somewhat of an erratic driver, middle of the afternoon, on a, I guess a side road, not very heavily traveled, went off the road, and the car burst into flames.
Really?
I mean, that's a big deal in these parts. That's
a big deal on any part, unless it's a Tesla. They like to burst into flames, those batteries.
Yes,
hundreds
that's true.
And hundreds of pounds of batteries. And they like to go up in flames. Well, I don't know. If the fuel tank was compromised and punctured, I guess that's what we're talking about, unless the battery's ignited. I guess you don't know for sure, unless you're there. Well, all right. Now, the EMT calls, and I know a lot of you, we know that a lot of people are listening, and that's good. You're trying to find out what's happening in your own town. You hear a siren, you can find out what that dispatch was. You can learn. It's very simple to do. Broadcast, IFY, broadcastify, and you can enter your own data and listen in. I think you only have to listen to one commercial when you open that service, but you can hear all the calls right there. The other issue seems to be a growing number of people calling in or others calling in for them after they have taken a dive on their heads, usually. They're falling. They're not tripping and stumbling over somebody's foot. They're just falling to the ground. Bam! And they'll often hit their heads. So these people are going out and down. Brainstem, autonomic nervous system interruption by amyloid microclotting, and the results, prions in the brain, more misfolded proteins, so to speak. Remember, we're going to go back to the beginning of this just to make sure everybody's up to speed. The spike protein has 7 sequences on it. And once the spike protein has been cleaved or split open, those 7 sequences are now exposed to everything that passes them by in the bloodstream. And what is so common in the bloodstream but other proteins? And when these proteins go by and they dock up with any of these 7 amyloidosis points on this spike protein that's been cleaved, they're going to misfold. In other words, they're taken out of the game. They're junk. They can no longer do their job. They misfolded. If you've seen a protein image, you'll know that if they misfold, they look like a mess. And we've had those pictures up in the past. So we have constantly the spike, maybe trillions of spike proteins in the body of someone who's recently been vaxxed, and they're destroying. They have 7 points on each spike once they're cleaved, and they can destroy an unlimited number of proteins. And those proteins are crucial for your body to survive. They all do different things. They're all important, and they're all being taken offline, so to speak.
Yep, well said.
Well, it was that hot fudge sundae I didn't have that allows me to be so articulate.
Well, we got to keep you hungry.
I suppose. Seriously, if you understand what happens when you roll up your sleeve, let's just go back to the beginning. You get injected. You get the instructions, and that those instructions are protected by liquid nanoparticles, and they keeping it simple, they go into a body cell in your body, and they infect, transfect that cell, and they order that cell to genetically now begin to manufacture spike proteins. Glory be. So you're in business of manufacturing spike proteins, which are antithetical to life. And we have made dozens of observations about how many different ways those spike proteins can kill. Do kill, will kill. And once you have it, now with our knowledge of the plasmids, the DNA plasmids, which go in and look for, they happen to like E. coli bacteria in your digestive tract. Well, they jump into the E. coli, and the first thing they do is make that E. coli bacteria antibiotic resistant. So they confer resistance to that infected bacteria. The antibiotic resistance on a... if you think about it, an E. coli bacteria is a recipe for disaster. But what does the E. coli bacteria then begin to do? It begins to manufacture, among other things, the instructions, the mRNA instructions, by which we'll go out and transfect other cells in your body, which will begin to make spike protein. So you have an endless loop. Think of it as a loop. You're looped, and you're going to get spike protein production from now until the cows come home or the undertaker shows up to cart you off to the last roundup. I don't know how else to say it, but that's just real simple stuff.
Well, that's we have to be careful there. That's what we think is happening based on these new findings. It hasn't been proven yet, but that possibility is definitely there and should be taken into consideration when assessing somebody for vaccine damage or any other kind of damage, shedding damage, whatever. This is just another dimension to this weapon. I mean, modify the microbiome of a person can have profound implications.
Yeah, we should say it's not just E. coli bacteria, but that happens to be apparently a favorite. So it can,
well, that's it the can one that its... that these plasmids originated in the lab.
Right.
So it would be a natural match for other E. coli bacteria that it encounters in your body.
Right. All right. Amyloid deposits, amyloid plaques, amyloid buildups in the body. What is amyloidosis? We have a neat little video we're going to play in a minute or two here, but amyloidosis is what the vaxxed, and we're beginning to think quite clearly, those who are effectively vaxxed by being shed upon. They're getting dosed, all right? They have amyloidosis issues too. Again, this is somewhat anecdotal, but that's what appears to be happening. What is amyloidosis?
Well, amyloidosis is the deposit of these abnormal proteins throughout the body, and there's several different types. Some are genetic; you inherit the susceptibility to it, but then others are acquired. In disease states, and I would certainly say that these injections lay the ground for a disease state. I mean, we are seeing it. There is more and more amyloidosis being diagnosed nowadays, and it's a disease of protein misfolding. And when they misfold, what happens is that they're no longer soluble, and so they build up. And they may build up in a variety of different...
They stick together.
Yeah. And they interfere with the function of an organ or tissue, depending on, it starts off in small amounts, but over time they build. And the problem is they don't dissolve. You can't really get rid of them. So it tends to be a progressive disease. And there's ways to manage it, but this is the pernicious thing about a protein misfolding disease is that once it starts, it self-propagates. So all you really need is the initiating misfolded protein to start the process, and the disease is underway.
Right. Let's extrapolate that to prion proteins in the brain. Prion proteins, people are a little confused. Let's straighten that out. Is that a specific kind of protein, or is
yes.
it a misfolded protein as well?
No, there's a normal conformation of a prion protein.
Mm-hmm.
But it, I believe when they were looking at this in the 80s, this was one of the first ones that was identified to having that potential to misfold and then go on to cause this disease known as Creutzfeldt-Jakob or spongiform encephalopathy, where the nerves end up dying, the nerve cells end up dying and then leaving a hole in its place.
Literally holes.
Yeah.
Dementia results. Some people want to call it Alzheimer's. It's Alzheimer's is a funny word. I think it can mean different things to different people, but it's ultimately terminal dementia, right?
Well, there's a number of proteins now that have been identified that have the potential of misfolding and mm-hmm. causing disease, and the one associated with Alzheimer's is amyloid beta. The one associated with ALS is... I believe it's SOD1, superoxide dismutase 1, and there may be another one associated with it. The one associated with Parkinson's would be alpha-synuclein. But there's about 60 different amyloid proteins that have been identified throughout the body. And then 36 of those are associated with a distinct human disease.
Wow.
How does it come about? Well, you lose control over... protein production, regulating your body's proteins. They need to be produced in the precise quantity at the precise time, and even more importantly, they need to be folded properly. They need to have a three-dimensional structure to perform the way they're supposed to. Now, with these injections, you've injected or introduced something that's going to really impact that process in a very detrimental way. You will not be able to fold your own proteins properly or produce them in the amounts required to regulate your entire physiology.
And
so I'm not surprised.
Any that are there are very likely to be ruined. It's not just the production of them. Let's call them adult, normal, properly folded proteins are being destroyed by the spike.
Yeah, if they come into contact with the spike, they, you know, could potentially misfold and begin this aggregation process.
Which ultimately results in these white tumors, fibers, clots. People call them different things. But they're these long white clots that are made of kind of like a meaty, think protein, a meaty substance. Right, they're almost good enough to use in a slingshot. It's bad, and that begins to build up in the veins and the arteries and the capillaries too, shutting off the capillaries. Once you shut down a capillary with microclotting, it doesn't come back to life, and the cells that were being served by that capillary, remember the blood cells go through there one at a time, and think of your brain. Once those capillaries are being destroyed, all the cells that were being fed by that capillary are usually dead.
That's right.
And that's the beginning of dementia. That's the last act. It's that simple.
Yep.
So you go out to a party, or you go into a room with a whole bunch of people who are vaxxed, and they're exhaling, and they're touching, and they're hugging, and they're shaking hands, and they're passing. They're shedding to the unvaxxed, however many may be there, 20%, I don't know, 10. And the unvaxxed then, unfortunately, begin to fall under the same syndrome, the spiral into oblivion, that the vaxxed are most certainly, in most cases, stuck in. They're percolating. They're circling the drain. How quickly will it happen? Don't know. But it's happening. More and more people are showing up with dozens of different kinds of complaints that get diagnosed. And there may be 10 or 12 other things that are subclinical at that time that are already being developed by the body and the spike protein. It's just horrible, this thing. Never heard anything like it in my life. Never.
Yeah, it is. You know, and you don't even need the full spike protein. It's various peptides within the protein are problematic.
So to speak. Right.
Problematic. And I think it was designed that way, too. That's why when you're taking things that supposedly bust up the spike, we're assuming that that's a good thing. We're assuming that that is making it less pathogenic, right. But it may not be.
It may be.
Keep that in mind.
Worse. A spike protein, and there's something you can take dietarily. I don't know what it would be. There are a lot of recommendations out there. But it goes in there supposedly to destroy the spike. Well, the spike has those 7 points on it, those spots, we'll call them, locations. And if the spike is now no longer one spike with 7 different locations, but say 5 pieces of that spike, if what you're taking is actually breaking them up, so 5 instead of 1 with 7, you've got 5 that are running loose. So you've proliferated the damage potential of one spike protein if you go in there and you break them up.
Yeah, that's a possibility. No one's looked at that, to my knowledge.
No, I've not heard it spoken about anywhere but here. No. All right, so let's play. You ready? Shall we play this little 3-minute video?
Yeah. We have played this, I don't know, what was it, 9, maybe a year ago. But it's a nice little video that describes the disease, amyloidosis, just how it begins and how it runs its course.
Right. It is under Jeff and Eric and guests. You'll find it there. I'll repost it in the archive on the right side of the homepage, so you'll be able to look at it again. And we urge you to do that. Understand what amyloids are. Nobody's talking about amyloids now. They've fallen out of favor. It's all about hydrogels and nanotechnology, and oh man, it's loopy land.
Yep.
Loopy land. All right, here we go. What is amyloidosis?
Amyloidosis is the term used to describe a group of diseases in which deposits of an abnormal protein called amyloid form in tissues and organs throughout the body. Proteins are important molecules involved in almost every structure and function within our cells. They are made up of chains of smaller units called amino acids, which fold themselves into 3-dimensional structures. Folding allows the protein to work properly and interact with other molecules. In amyloidosis, proteins are made in the normal way, but when they are released from the cell, they open up again. These abnormally folded proteins collect together in long chains or fibrils. The deposits they form are called amyloid. Amyloid fibrils are difficult to break down, and as they accumulate, they start to cause damage. Eventually, the buildup of amyloid fibrils stops the affected tissue from working properly. AL amyloidosis is caused by a bone marrow disorder. The bone marrow produces blood cells, including plasma cells, a type of white blood cell that forms part of the immune system. Plasma cells make antibodies to help fight infection. Each antibody is made up of 4 protein chains, 2 heavy chains and 2 light chains, which attach to each other to form the complete antibody. In AL amyloidosis, the abnormal protein that builds up and causes problems is the antibody light chain, hence the name AL amyloidosis. Instead of attaching to heavy chains, the abnormal light chains open up and bind to other abnormal light chains to form amyloid fibrils. These gradually build up over time. Amyloid light chain fibrils can occur almost anywhere in the body.
By the way, this video is very nicely illustrated with digital imagery, so you don't want to miss this. Take a look at it a little later.
The organs most commonly affected include the kidneys, the heart, liver, spleen, nerves, and the digestive system. Treatment for AL amyloidosis involves chemotherapy, steroids, high-dose therapy, and stem cell transplant, and other drugs. Treatment is aimed at reducing the plasma cells to stop further amyloid light chains being made that would otherwise build up in tissues and organs. It also gives the body a chance to break down existing deposits naturally. However, on its own, this process can take many months or years. New treatments which break down the amyloid deposits more quickly are currently being tested in AL amyloidosis. The hope is that they can reduce symptoms and restore function quickly, and in doing so, improve quality of life for patients.
Okay, there it is. Do take another look later. Here's the deal. It could take months or years for the body to naturally break these down, given some of the supplements recommended there. Do they really work? It's tough to say. I think the general evidence would support some efficacy, but if it can take years with those particular supplements, and you've been injected, and you just got a booster last week, and trillions more spike proteins have been and are being made in your system, constantly creating amyloid proteins, as it were. In other words, they've been turned into, you know, imagine you've got cinder blocks and you're building a wall, turning in these proteins, which would otherwise do all kinds of different things, into cinder blocks for building amyloid deposits. Remember when we were trying to make it clear in the beginning that clots were not all blood clots, and people were saying, yes, clots, get a D-dimer test. D-dimer test does not determine an amyloid clot. It won't react to it. It's not blood-based. It's protein-based. So to find out if you have amyloidosis, what are the common ways that are used? Do you have any knowledge of that? What do they do?
Well, the traditional, I think, gold standard is what they call a fat pad biopsy, where they take a piece of your skin. I believe it's from the abdomen. I mean, it's as the name suggests, fat. Then they send it to a laboratory and they stain it for the presence of these abnormal proteins. So that really is the gold standard. And so there's different types. I think if amyloidosis in the cardiac tissue is suspected, I think they actually have to go in there and get a piece of cardiac tissue and do the same thing. You know, if somebody just wants to know if they're forming those fibrils in their blood, maybe, but more definitively would be something called a thromboelastogram. And then there is at least one doctor here in the States, I'm sure there's going to be more, who's performing that service for vax-injured people now, Dr. Mm-hmm. Jordan Vaughn out of Birmingham, Alabama, has been trained by the South African doctor, Ressia Pretorius, who first figured out that this was happening in the blood of these both people afflicted by the virus and definitely people who have been vax-injured. I don't know if you actually have to be a patient of his or if this is a service you can, you know, order on your own. But that would answer the question, you know, rather definitively if you are forming these types of clots. Routine blood tests won't do it. Won't do it.
No. Nope. All right. And again, if you're not vaxxed, but you have been shed upon, you may have spike in you, and that spike will begin the process of creating amyloidosis. It's one of the many things it does. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Have you heard anything more about Novavax being approved for children?
Well, that was a topic of discussion at that FDA panel a couple weeks ago. They were mm-hmm. pushing for it. The original one is defunct now. They kind of shut that down or let it go, but they want to ramp up with a booster for the current variant, some version of Omicron, and they do want to make it available for children. Mm-hmm. Arcturus, well, no, it's, I don't know, they're targeting a couple different ones, which, of course, by the time they get this to market, will be obsolete. This virus isn't standing still.
No. No, it's getting new wardrobe and new paint jobs and augmentations. It's changing.
Well, the frightening thing is, I believe, and Gert Van den Bosch has alluded to this, that the selective pressure that's being put on the virus with this leaky vaccine program is forcing it to become something of a stealth virus, where it will have the ability to evade pretty much all of the immune response and just go straight into whatever tissue it finds, the most frightening being the nervous system.
All true. I had another tragic encounter with someone who tried to tell me that there are no such things as viruses. Oh, why? And these poor people, honest to God, might as well be on a different planet. It's so ludicrous.
Well, that propaganda has been out there now for 2 years. I believe that the intent of it is to keep people in the dark about these well-funded bio-warfare programs, the bioweapons development programs that are ongoing.
Don't forget, when we went in to look and analyze what was going on in Iraq in terms of U.S.-funded bioweapons labs, just in Ukraine, there were over 45 bioweapons research labs. That's just in Ukraine. Any country in the world can have these things. They're probably spread out in dozens and dozens of countries, African countries, whatever.
They're building more. They're not reducing them. They're building more.
No. Yeah. They're racing headlong into a cataclysm, one way or the other, whether it's a bio-induced cataclysm or a thermonuclear or both. They're just determined to bring this whole thing down. There's no other way to look at it. I can't. That's it. So Novavax, some of you are saying, what's that? What's that? Okay. Tell them what Novavax is compared to the other normal so-called vaccines like Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca. What's different about Novavax? And we're going to explain why they're trying to put these into children, for God's sakes.
Novavax is just the spike protein. There's no mRNA or adenovirus that's going to instruct your cells to manufacture the protein. The protein's already made, and it's directly injected into the person. So it's a full-length spike protein with all its attributes, good, bad, and indifferent. You hope your body responds to it properly. And if it ends up making copious amounts of antibodies, well, those antibodies will be very helpful when you're exposed to the real virus, because in all likelihood, they're going to be infection-enhancing antibodies, because the virus will have mutated so that the antibodies from the vaccine will not have the ability to actually neutralize the latest variant.
What are the chances of this being made available to children? To kill children faster, that's all it is.
Oh, I don't know. You'd have to ask Al Borla, you know, play to pay.
Big Al.
Pay to play.
Let's ask Big Al and find out. All right. And these people are going to skate, every one of them. There's going to be no accountability, just like Hunter Biden. His old man will pardon him. Creeper Joe will pardon himself. He can do that.
Mm.
Don't forget how the game works. They are above all laws and are answerable to nobody. So there you go. All right, let's go and take a look at the most hidden part of this whole genocide against humankind, and that's the human suffering of people that is never talked about in the so-called media at all. It's hidden. They don't even mention vax injured. I'm sure once in a while they do, but it doesn't happen very often. So we have lots of anecdotal. We're first to tell you that. We always have. But these are people writing into various groups complaining about their injuries and what they're dealing with and how horrible it is. And they're they're quite honest about it. And are these diagnosed in every case? No. But we have a pretty good idea of the profile of suffering as to what may be causing a lot of the complaints. All right. June 30th. Geez, the year is half over. Think about that. Half gone. It just started 2 months ago.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah. I'm supposed to come over and paint your house, aren't I, this summer? Something? I forget. I don't want the time to go by. Anyhow, we'll get it done. All right.
Right.
Now, amyloidosis. What do you want to do? You start with those?
Yeah, since we're on that topic, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but I've been watching this group over the last couple of months, and it is growing. And what's interesting is amyloidosis has typically been a disease of older men. Average age of onset, 55 to 65 years old. It's considered a hematological disease, blood disorder, or an endocrine disorder. Symptoms, feeling tired, weight loss, swelling of the legs, shortness of breath, bleeding, feeling lightheaded when standing.
Mm-hmm.
Sound familiar?
Well, I'm not old enough, but I get it.
Well, we hear a lot of that lately. So these people experiencing these symptoms probably ought to be checked for amyloidosis, or they seem like they may be good candidates for it, given what we know.
Well, here's yes. Let's say someone's vaxxed, they get checked for amyloidosis, and the test comes back positive. What the hell are they going to do about it? If
drugs.
It's potentially growing in every any blood vessel, any capillary, any artery, any tissue in your body, where blood is brought in through veins and capillaries.
Well, bear in mind, it's not it can occur in the blood, but then it can occur organically in other tissues.
Right, that's why
The AL, the amyloid light chain, originates in the bone marrow. It comes from the plasma cells.
Right.
They enter the bloodstream, and then they'll lodge into various organs and tissues. The kidneys are often affected.
Mm-hmm. You heard the video, and she rattled off four or five supplement sorts of things, and there are drugs.
Pfizer came out with two drugs that target specific types of amyloidosis. I don't know, 2 years ago.
Do we trust Pfizer? Do we trust Pfizer to do anything? Do we trust?
Well, these were the drugs.
Works?
These were the drugs that were, I think I told you, I think they're $250,000 a year. Now, you can appeal to them for compassionate use.
No.
But they will prevent the progression of the disease to some extent.
So they say. Look, I don't... At $250,000, that would suggest in a linear thought process... Yeah, they came up with something that actually works. So they're going to screw the public six ways from Sunday at $250,000 a year to treat. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Well, and that's just to manage it. That's not a cure. It's just to manage it.
Yeah. All right, here's the first one. Now, remember, these are all real people reporting on real issues. My father has recently been diagnosed with cardiac amyloidosis by echo when he had a small heart attack and a stent put in it. It's not stint, by the way. It's stent, ENT. He is having a nuclear test for cardiac amyloid, PYP, done in a couple weeks, so he is not yet being treated. But in the past month or so, he has lost his strength and become weak. He is 79, but very strong and active. Retired, but still works. Hunts, fishes, gardens, every day. And currently, he can't do hardly anything because he's exhausted. He has lost 15 pounds in a month and a half. His right foot is swollen and painful, which I am thinking now may be peripheral neuropathy. He recently had carpal tunnel surgery, and the swelling has yet to go down. And I am wondering if that could also be some complication with the amyloid or not. Has anyone experienced any of these types of symptoms with cardiac amyloid? Go ahead.
First answer, yes, similar experience. Also had two heart attacks and surgery on my right hand. My legs swelled up so much I could hardly walk, and I had a lot of difficulty breathing and was rushed to the hospital when I started coughing up water. While they were treating the symptoms as an inpatient, including giving me a large dose of potassium and other medications directly in my heart via a Swan-Ganz, the symptoms probably should be treated now. The PYP scan is painless, small injection, then waiting time of a few hours, and then under a camera for a while. Original poster asks, was your leg swollen due to edema? Did you lose strength and were physically weak due to the swelling in your leg? Well, the odd thing is, and I see this in a number of groups that are devoted to discussing various health issues. New people are coming into the group. Let's just say, for example, mercury toxicity. People will be having neurological problems and then get it in their mind that they must be mercury toxic. But nobody's discussing the most obvious intervention over the past 2 years that could likely explain this new onset of symptoms. So I think people are going down rabbit holes, completely overlooking what I would consider a most obvious cause of many of these problems, and I think going on wild goose chases.
Nonstop. Agreed. All right, the next one says, hi, I've just joined the group as my sister died very unexpectedly in her sleep a few weeks ago. She was only 57. The post-mortem has just come back, and the cause of death is listed as systemic amyloidosis. I just need some advice, more information really about this disease, and do her close relatives need to be tested? Never heard of this disease before. She had been having chest pain, which doctors said was costochondritis and fibromyalgia. Sure. Many thanks. Go ahead.
First comment. This is so sad for you and the family. So sorry for your loss. I can't advise you in any way about testing, but I do hope you get the answers. Another one says, you can ask your doctor for a referral to a specialist or to get tests. Certain types of amyloid are genetic or hereditary, and some are, I'm not sure what that means. Not my family got tested just in case, but mine is not hereditary. And my family were all clear. I have it in the heart as well and was told not to take the jab because side effects from it can cause more problems if you already have amyloid, as I do, in the heart.
How common is non-bioweapon ignited amyloidosis in people?
It was considered a rare disease before all this. I said, it was typically late onset, typically in males. There are a few hereditary forms of it, but wait till you see the next one. I would surmise that this person just described her sister dying in her sleep at 57 years old, having had costochondritis and fibromyalgia before this. Well, how many jabs did she have?
By the way, I do think a lot of doctors are dishing off costochondritis as a diagnosis of chest pain. Oh,
yes.
My. No. You want to find out if you have costochondritis? Just push your finger on your ribs in the area of pain, and if your ribs hurt like hell, you can tell it's on the outside. It's not on the inside of your thoracic cavity. It's in your ribs. They do become inflamed. The connective tissue does. It's easy to figure out. So, all right. My father, age 56, 9 months post stem cell transplant, a patient of amyloidosis. His heart and kidney are affected. Post-transplant, he faced a very rough journey and recently had a brain stroke. He was on maintenance therapy of having Revlimid for 21 days, then 7-day gap. Then again, 21 days, and the cycle began again. But due to the stroke, they stopped it. One other issue he had post-stroke was a drop in platelets, which he is now recovering from. And post-transplant, he is always having very low hemoglobin, and post-stroke, it also dropped a lot. I just want to ask if there's anyone in remission with similar conditions without any maintenance therapy, and anyone who has faced low hemoglobin issues post-transplant, and for how long? Meaning transplant, stem cell transplant. All right, onward.
Well, there were zero comments to that.
None.
And a couple days after that, or a day later, she says, could anyone please reply?
Wow.
Well, you know, it sounds like
crickets.
You may be in the wrong group.
Crickets. That's all she got. Crickets.
You know, is it really amyloidosis or is it Vax injury? You know, with these hematological disorders and low platelets and...
Well, just understanding what the spike does to other proteins in the body should tip these people off. But they don't understand even that. They don't know. They don't know how the spike works. They don't know what it does. They know spike. Some of them do. Most of them do. They don't understand anything beyond that. It's sad. And many people will come up with a sound bite or a paragraph that they read somewhere, and they'll adopt that as their own definitive psychological approach to understanding this. And unfortunately, in many cases, the people putting these materials out are idiots. And we've mentioned a few before by name, but they continue to gain an awful lot of exposure with their hydrogel, self-assembling, nanotechnology garbage. It's just nonstop. All right, next one. I am on Vindamax and Amvutra. Had my first shot in April. So far, no improvement. Just been getting worse. Pins and needles in hands, arms, and feet. Strength loss, fatigue, dizziness, loss of balance. Everything I eat runs right through me in minutes. Talk about transit time. Minutes? I wonder if she's exaggerating. Any advice would be appreciated. Any diet advice, natural meds, or anything that might be positive. I'm praying and trying to exercise when I can. I used to work out a lot, and I was pretty strong, but now my strength is about 40%. God bless.
And again, I would ask, how many shots?
Should be the first qualifier in any of these groups. Just state it.
I've had three shots or none. If this profile picture of this person is any indication, he's not an old man. Somebody says, sorry that you're going through all that. My dad was like that for 3 months. He had to use a wheelchair. He started improving after the fourth treatment. He's not at 100%, but he's doing better and walking again. As for his diet, he's on low sodium, drinks protein shakes with fruit, and is eating like he used to. Per his doctor's advice, he's gained some weight and is looking better. We'll be praying for you.
All right, the next one. We have weak immunity with this disease. I had sepsis 3 times in a 4 or 5 month period when I was first diagnosed. Later, I've had cellulitis and even meningitis. Our immune system can't fight off things that healthy people can easily fight off. I guess he's talking about being vaxxed here.
Our immune system. It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I go to ER, first sign that I can't shake off anything. I've been admitted quite a bit for heavy-duty antibiotic treatment. I spent 15 weeks of my first year after being diagnosed. I think that's what it says. The next one is real short. Then you take the last one.
Okay.
Someone answers to that. My husband was an amyloidosis patient who ended up dying from sepsis on June 3rd, 2023. I'm wondering whether his medical records and all my detailed journaling would be of any help to the amyloidosis world. Well, don't know.
Or the vax-injured world.
Yeah, indeed. Go ahead.
All right.
Number six.
Okay, this is a little lengthy, but the kicker's at the end. Hello, my dears. On December 22, December 30th, 2022, it started overnight with an extreme feeling of fullness and bloating and pain. I could only eat a little, and I was at 50 kilograms. I got a total loss of sensation in my stomach. Over the weeks, the pain has stopped. No nausea, no growling, no hunger, as if there was nothing in the place of the stomach. Only the bloating was extremely painful. 3 weeks ago, my intestines and bladder tingled extremely. The next morning, everything was slack. I have also lost the sensations in the bowel and bladder. It all feels numb. The pain is completely gone. The bloated stomach is still clearly there, but I can pull it in, which was not possible before because the sensations are gone. I no longer feel when my bladder is full. I still have regular bowel movements, but sometimes it's undigested, but I have to remind myself to eat or pee. I really don't feel any sensation in my internal organs. I have exactly the same with my heartbeat. The pulse is 50 and goes to 150, and I don't feel anything. No dizziness, don't get black before my eyes, don't panic. All of this is no longer normal, and this condition comes in phases and then gets worse. I have the feeling that I am no longer protected at all because my body no longer warns me of certain dangers. Since it all started with a gastrointestinal tract, I wanted to ask if you might have any advice. I know it sounds extremely weird, but I have really lost all sense of the internal organs and body signals. Now I'm so weak. I have symptoms that match dementia, and my left eye sees weaker and sees a dot. Here we go. 6 months ago, I was a healthy 27-year-old.
27 years old.
I don't know if it could relate to amyloidosis. Some people have suggested small fiber neuropathy.
First question.
And I would ask, how many vax?
I think these are vax people. I think you can tell.
They have to be.
Yeah.
27? And to have this sudden type of onset?
See, they can't connect the dots, or they won't. They don't know. They should instantaneously know after 2.5 years. My God, I took these 6 shots, 5 shots, 3 shots, whatever. And familiarize yourself with what's going on out there. But how do you do it when you stare at the screen for your version of reality? You're not going to hear about what people are suffering from. So I don't blame them, but they are living in a vacuum. There's nothing there. Wow. All right. Well, I hope that was helpful for everyone. Wishing you a great weekend. Thanks for being here, as always. We're here for you. And thank you, partner. Great job, as always.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. My pleasure. Have a good weekend, everyone.
All right. We'll be right back. Dear friends, don't go away.